This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler. A moment with my good friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. For many years, Gordon and I have carefully looked at the story of the People's Republic of China. And you're looking at a tyranny where the people are suffering. However, now and again, it's needed to step back from China, step back from East Asia, step back from Eurasia, what is called the big picture, and ask, have we seen this pattern before? And I do not mean tyranny in the People's Republic. I mean small wars. For example, 1904, the Russo-Japanese War, ending in a negotiation in America for all things. The Italo-Turkish War, Italy attacking the Ottoman Empire in 1911. The Balkan Wars, twice, 1912 and 1913, Serbia, Bulgaria, its neighbors, taking on the Ottoman Empire. Disruption in the Balkans. And then 1914, we all remember that because of the start of the First War. However, what contributed to it was small wars invariably attach themselves to great powers, suppliers or arbiters or allies, and those great powers get pulled into small wars and then bump elbows with the other great powers. That's what happened in the First War. It started in the Balkans and then turned into an attack along the Belgian-French frontier, and that's where the front line stayed for the horrors of the next 4 years. So, Gordon, I submit all that not as a prediction of the future, but as to say how small wars contribute to the larger chaos. You have something important to say about deliberate policy of chaos in Beijing. Please explain, Gordon.
I think that Xi Jinping, who reveres Mao Zedong, has taken 2 pages out of Mao's peasant movement playbook. The first one is encircling the cities from the countryside. And that's how Mao prevailed in 1949 over Chiang Kai-shek. And I think that Xi looks at places like Ukraine, North Africa, Israel as countryside, and we are the city. The other one involves chaos. Mao Zedong believed that great chaos under heaven achieves great order under heaven. That's what he wrote his wife, Zhongqing, in 1966. And by great order under heaven, Mao was referring to worldwide Chinese rule. So I think that Xi Jinping is trying to disrupt the international system because he believes that this is really just sort of a way station to his complete control of humanity.
Do you see China's hand in these conflicts?
Yes. So for instance, 20 days before Russia attacked Ukraine in February 2022, Vladimir Putin was in Moscow. They issued their 5,300-word joint statement where they declared their no-limits partnership.
He was visiting in Beijing, I believe you said.
Visiting in Beijing. And that was, where Putin and Xi Jinping actually talked about the Ukraine war that was about to be launched. Since then, China's support for the Russian war effort has been across the board. It's been economic, diplomatic, propaganda, and even the provision of lethal assistance. We see the same thing in North Africa, where China and Russia are fueling insurgencies that look like wars. And in the Middle East, I believe that Iran is China's proxy. Again, we see the Chinese with economic, diplomatic, propaganda, and the provision of weapons. So really, China is fighting proxy wars, at least three sets of them. And I think that we need to look at these conflicts in a broader way. You know, our friend Greg Copley says that there is no such thing as a regional war anymore. And I believe that he's right. And he believes that because Russia and China are directly or indirectly involved in conflicts across the globe. So that means every war has a global significance.
And Gordon, how does this benefit China again? If China emerges as supreme because of these wars, I'm trying to figure what the formula is, because we're right now we're at the edge of a what appears to be an exchange of missiles that can be extremely chaotic. So what happens next then from Beijing's point of view?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that the Chinese have embarked on a strategy that could really backfire. I suppose that Xi Jinping believes that if he can win these proxy wars, that he creates an aura of inevitability. And that, you know, is his sort of form of diplomacy to intimidate everybody into doing what he wants. And if he thinks that, for instance, the United States will not support allies and friends, that Russia and Iran can actually make important gains on the ground. Now, there's a lot that can go wrong. Proxy wars, a sly, cunning strategy, have backfired throughout history. So this is going to be something where I think Xi Jinping probably hasn't thought through how this can go really badly for China.
Your measure of not just the Biden administration, the Trump administration, the Obama, going back to George Bush and Bill Clinton, there has been this perception that China can be educated, guided, assisted, augmented in some fashion in joining the community of nations, not only joining, but being a power. There's been the perception that it will respond if treated benignly in some fashion. My measure now is that it's not working out. Does Washington recognize it now?
I think that most people in Washington recognize that China is a dangerous power. But what hasn't come is a consensus on what to do about it. Because there are still some who believe in isolationism. And that, of course, has been a long-term trend in the Republican Party. And there are others who just think that we should be husbanding material for a fight later on. So, and of course, there are people who think that we should oppose China and Russia in these proxy contests. So there's no consensus on what to do. But, you know, you put your finger on something, and that is that the perception of China as a player in Washington has darkened. And that means that there will be consequences as Beijing continues on a road of belligerence. So there no longer, I think, is a view that we can work cooperatively with China, and therefore it will become a responsible member of the global community. So therefore we should support the Communist Party. And that view really was dominated 25 years of American diplomacy.
And the economy, which we've focused on and will again, we watched it very carefully, because it's integrated into the world supply chain. The economy is struggling badly. The unemployment is high among young people. That is not a concern for Xi. Is that the way to understand him? He's indifferent to that because of this Mao dream.
Yeah, I wish I could answer that question. I think that Xi Jinping believes that the road to recovery for China is really the creation of a wartime economy. Okay. And building up China's manufacturing capability, which means that ultimately he has to flood global markets with Chinese products. And I think he believes that because he has rejected other avenues that economists and analysts almost uniformly tell him that he should pursue. So, for instance, encouraging consumption, just like the United States has. And Xi Jinping doesn't want to do that because he doesn't want to empower consumers. He doesn't want to offend key constituencies in the Communist Party. And he doesn't want to do anything that would undermine the solvency of state banks. So he's embarked on a road which I think is very unlikely to produce what he wants, which is a healthy Chinese economy.
Gordon Chang, I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.